This is the Andy George Leadership Podcast. This is a podcast that is all about helping you to reach your potential, to define your purpose, and to live with passion. And I'm your host, Andy George, and I want to thank you so much, as always, for taking time out of your busy schedule to listen to this episode. Before we jump into my conversation with licensed clinical social worker Anthony Thomas on how to conquer your fears, I want to encourage you that if you haven't done so yet, go ahead and make sure you subscribe and share this podcast. You can also go over to andygeorgecoaching.com for more information and for more content. Well, as I said, I had a great conversation with Anthony Thomas, who is a LCSW, a licensed clinical social worker. And I wanted to talk to him on his experiences with how to conquer fears. You know, this is really driven out of the fact that at the time of this recording, there is so much craziness happening in the world around us. It really is. There is so much craziness happening in the world, whether it's a shooting at the time of this recording. There was a shooting at UNC Charlotte at the university with loss of life. There's churches and synagogues that are being bombed and shot at. There's just the regular violence that's happening. Of course, on top of that, we have the political climate. We have countries that are doing all sorts of things that are just fear-based. And here we are looking at it, trying to live our life in that context. So not only the fears outside of our control, but also the things that are happening to our life, whether it's in our job or in our relationships or just in our own personal health and our own personal mind. So I think right now there's so many people that are just so afraid. I thought it'd be a great conversation about how to actually conquer your fears. So at this time, we're going to jump into my conversation with Anthony Thomas, and I really do hope that this helps you, and I really do hope that this will inspire you and help you maybe take a look at where you are, and really, if you have some kind of fear that's happening inside of you, to really be able to name it and take steps to overcoming that fear. So I hope you enjoy my conversation, and here we go. We're going to jump into it right now. Well, hey, as I said, this is Andy George, and I'm here with Anthony Thomas. How are you doing, Anthony?
Very good, Andy. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. I'm so glad that you are on this special episode. And as I've already told the listeners, this episode is special because we're going to be talking about how to actually conquer your fears. And I thought, you know, if we're going to talk about fears, we probably should talk to somebody who might know a little something when it comes to counseling, when it comes to dealing with people on how to actually overcome fears. So, Anthony, your title is a licensed clinical social worker.
Yes, that's right.
All right. So what exactly does that mean, other than you're just really smart and way smarter than I am?
I'm educated well beyond my intelligence, but I'm a counselor. I have a private practice. That's one of the, there's probably three or four state monitored licenses that allow you to practice counseling, and that's one of them. And so I can open a private practice and counsel people, and I'm licensed by the state to do that.
Yeah, excellent. So, you know, I was thinking about this because we're living in a world right now, and I guess what really triggered me is at the time of this recording here, just on the news and everywhere, it seems like people are afraid, just constantly afraid of shootings. Like I said, at the time of this recording, we had a shooting out at one of our universities in North Carolina in Charlotte. There's churches that have been bombed recently. There's terrorist stuff happening. There's violence all around. And then, of course, there's the economy. There's governments. And on top of all that, all of our own little fears that we have. And so I thought it'd be kind of timely to talk about how do we actually conquer those fears. So before we jump into some of the practical things, what are you afraid of, Anthony Thomas? What are you afraid of? There's got to be something you're afraid of.
I don't like snakes now.
Okay. So you're afraid of snakes.
Well, sure. They bite you. And they're gross.
So do you think that that's a fear or a phobia?
I think it's being wise, really. But a phobia is a fear. And so, and talking about fears, you know, one of the biggest upticks in diagnoses is anxiety. And anxiety really is worries and fears. And so there's a lot of people that have anxiety, teenagers, adults. And so it's really, we joke about different fears, but, you know, fear of of social situations, fear of, you know, that you're going to do something to look silly in front of people, or, you know, where you're so worried about others' judgment that you can't focus on the task at hand. That is a big deal.
Yeah. So you said that you're seeing an uptick in that. What do you think is causing that in our culture and society today? What's causing the increase with adolescents all the way up through adults when it comes to being anxious and anxiety and fears?
Well, there's a lot of pressures today for sure. You know, performance pressure. It's hard to just be a kid anymore without competing at elite levels at everything from an early age. And so everything feels like a competition and a striving to be the best. It's not about just, hey, you enjoy baseball and so you go play baseball. That's just not good enough. And so so there's not a place for people that just want to play baseball. You really, you know, especially as you get older, you've got to be an elite athlete to be able to play baseball. And so, you know, so there's a lot of pressures. And I think that certainly feeds into the stress of it. I think our always on, you know, back when I was a young person, we would get bored and we had a lot of downtime. Now our brains are always activated and even activated all night, whether it's watching a movie or a screen or, you know, we're just always on. And so These are some of the things I'm thinking of that I think create this uptick in anxiety and fears.
So how much do you think social media plays into it? You know, as you said, we're always on, we're always being looked at, we're always dealing with everything. So for example, if I'm on social media and I am not feeling good about myself or feeling good about my career or my choices, and then I get on social media and I see somebody else doing really well or excelling way beyond I am, how much do you think that plays into, and have you had to deal with, whether it's adults or teenagers, in the realm of not allowing somebody else's life on social media dictate kind of your own feelings of anxiety?
Sure, without a doubt. And even if you are feeling good about yourself, you know, the whole political correctness world out there that really is strong in the social media world, even if you have an opinion that you feel good about, it's easy to be attacked and judged even by various positive opinions. And so it's hard to say anything without being criticized, which can make you really overanalyze and over worry about what others think. And so it's almost impossible to say anything without creating some kind of backlash today. All that can make you more worried than used to be in the old days when you would just say what you think.
Right. How afraid are you about Clemson football for the fall? Seeing how I think, you know, you guys did good last year. You're a Clemson fan. You went to Clemson. Yeah. So how
I'm really relaxed about that this year. I'm feeling good. I'm ready for Ohio State.
Hey, man, let's get it on. All right, Anthony. So I pulled a couple articles that I wanted to run past you. Once again, I'm not a licensed clinical social worker or counselor in that regard. So a lot of the stuff that we see and feel, we're just going by what people say. And I wonder often how often these are actual, you know, real deal things versus how many things are just blown up out of proportion. So I thought it was interesting. I pulled an article by a Jacob Olison, and it's literally, the title is The Top 10 Phobias of All Time. And it's 2019 updated. So this is the 2019 updated version of the top 10 phobias of all time. And just for our listeners, I'm going to kind of run through it and see how many of these, you know, hold true. And maybe some of our listeners have this, but the first one I never even heard of before, it's called trypophobia, T-R-Y-P-O-phobia. You know what that is? That is the fear of holes.
Holes. Oh, for tripping.
It's just the fear of holes. It says this fear may seem irrational to normal people. The mere sight or thought of holes can set panic attacks as a result. So things like coral, sponges, skin, meat, dried honeycombs, pretty much anything that has holes in it, that is a fear. Never heard of that one.
Yeah, that's new for me too.
I don't have that one. I like honeycombs. Remember honeycomb cereal?
Yes.
I don't know if they make that anymore. Okay, the next one, number nine, was aerophobia, which is the fear of flying. That's definitely a one I've seen people have before.
Yeah.
it says it affects about 6.5% of the world's population.
Yeah.
Another one is misophobia, misophobia, the fear of germs. I'm guessing that one's getting more and more going on. Number seven is claustrophobia, which that's one I'm sure most listeners are aware of, saying that nearly 5 to 7% of the world's population is going to suffer as claustrophobic. Astrophobia, you know what that one is? It's a little quiz.
No.
Astrophobia is the fear of thunder and lightning.
Okay. That's the one.
My dogs have that. I don't know about yours, but my dogs do not like that. Speaking of dogs, cynophobia, C-Y-N-O-phobia, is the fear of dogs.
Okay.
Yeah. It's saying that nearly 36% of sufferers seek treatment for cynophobia, and the majority are also known to be afraid of cats as well. It's kind of interesting. It says that nearly 75% of cynophobes are women, mostly women. Interesting.
There you go.
Agoraphobia, that's another one I'm sure we all know of, of open or crowded spaces, the fear of open or crowded spaces. Acrophobia, the fear of heights. I have that one.
Okay.
I was trying to think about what am I really afraid of? And I'm definitely afraid of heights, but that stems from something. And that's what I want to get to in a moment. Ophidiophobia, the fear of snakes. That's what you have.
There you go.
And then the last one is arachnophobia. So arachnophobia, fear of spiders. It's amazing how a little spider can cause fear. I went to wash my hands in the bathroom last night, and I turned the light on. I put my head down to the sink, and when I picked my head up, just right in front of my nose is a spider coming down. And it was about the size of, it was small. And I was like frozen for a moment going, oh my gosh, like what is this thing going to do to me? So it's kind of crazy. All right. So phobia. So like I'm afraid of heights. And the reason I'm afraid of heights is because when I was a teenager, I fell off a ladder one time that was pretty high, and it, you know, I hurt myself pretty bad. But ever since then, I got this phobia or this fear of heights. I just do not like heights. In fact, in the spring, summertime, even fall in North Carolina, if you drive past my house and if you see a ladder on the side of my house, it's my wife up on the ladder and I'm the one holding the ladder. All right, that's just a known thing. All right. So Anthony, where do fears and phobias come from your thoughts, your education?
Well, these things, I think of it in a cognitive behavioral framework. And so they come from within our mind, from feelings that we have that interact with our thoughts that relate to some behavior. And so we may notice ourselves getting panicky, and so that kind of behavior makes us feel a certain way. And we might then think, oh my gosh, I'm going to fall. And so that produces more of the, maybe then you're sweating and you're starting to have a breathing heavier, and oh, I'm definitely going to fall is the thought, and the feeling becomes panic. And so, this interplay between our inner world is really at the heart of these fears. So there's an external reality, and then there's an internal reality. And sometimes the external reality is, the internal reality might be way out of proportion to the external reality. The external reality might be a very small little spider.
Right.
But our internal reality might be panic.
Yeah. So in your opinion, and I read a couple of articles on this, and I was just wondering your thoughts, and I kind of mentioned earlier joking about snakes, but I keep seeing the words phobia, but also just fear. Is there a difference between somebody who has an actual phobia and people who are just afraid of something? So for example, Chapman University, I read an article, they released their top 10 fears of 2018. These weren't phobias, these were just fears. And the top 10 fears ranked from 1 to 10. It was corrupt government officials, pollution, drinking water, not having enough money, people that they love becoming ill, people they love dying, air pollution again, extinction of plants and animal species, global warming, climate change, high medical bills. So these were fears that Chapman University did a study in. But those don't sound like phobias. Those are fears. So yeah. how would you differentiate between a phobia and a fear?
So I think a phobia would be more characterized like a disorder. Like when you've got thoughts that might be somewhat, they might be slightly irrational. And maybe the way you're reacting, you're feeling like it's a problem how I'm reacting.
Gotcha.
If you're afraid of something but it may be good reason you're afraid of something. And so you avoid it. That's not irrational behavior. That's nothing you'd want to seek treatment for. Even avoiding getting on a ladder, if you think you're going to fall and you really might fall, stay away from the ladder. If you realize that, wow, I think I'm out of proportion, I think I might have a exaggerated phobia, then you've got kind of a disorder related to this. And then it could be something you could work on.
Yep. So some of the other fears that people have would be fear of death, fear of loneliness is a big one. This is what I want to kind of start to turn the corner away from phobias and more to fears that people have. Cause I think I agree with you that a phobia is a little bit, maybe unrealistic, or there's something that's actually happening that's a little deeper that's causing unrational fears. But you know, people have a fear of public speaking. They have a fear of giving up in public. They have a fear of people have a fear of intimacy.
Yeah. Right?
They have fear of failure. That's a big one too. So how would you, if I came to you and I said, you know, I really am having a hard time just letting people see the real me. Like, I'm afraid that if people see the real me, that they're not going to accept me. They're not going to like me. So it's a fear of intimacy to some degree. Or, you know, I'm afraid to do anything at all because I'm afraid I'm going to fail. What would be some of the things that you would work through me on how to actually conquer those kind of fears?
Yeah. And what's coming to my mind is this anxiety worksheet that I have that I use with folks to help them think through what their fear and worry is about. It helps them name the fear, describe the concern. So we'd have a guided conversation where you would just describe the concerns and what is it about that thing that is bothering you and that's making you afraid. So you describe those things. The worksheet guides you to start thinking a little more scientifically maybe about about what you're describing as a fear, and analyze your concern a little bit. You can think of it like you're a scientist for a moment, or a teacher, or someone that doesn't struggle with fear of this particular thing. How would they describe the situation and get you beginning to think of some other perspectives? And then we'd begin to think about your internal world, your thoughts, your feelings, and ultimately your behaviors, like physical symptoms you're having that are triggering your thoughts and your feelings, and begin to describe the cycle that you're going through as it relates to this particular situation. That's kind of the beginning of is that I would hear more from you. We kind of analyze your inner cycle that's going on, so you're aware of that. And then I think our brains can go on a couple of tracks. You can get on a worry track, your fear track, if you think about a train track, or you can get on the smart train track. And the worry track begins to heighten the concerns. It begins to catastrophize. It begins to think what could happen. The smart track begins to think a little more realistic, what's likely to happen, allows you to kind of begin to relax yourself in the midst of the thought. And so when you can begin to realize that I can actually put myself in a couple of states, I can decide I'm going to stay on the smart track, or I can recognize I'm on the worry track and I'm out of control with worry and fear. That analyzing two tracks and you beginning to understand your different tracks is a part of the process as well.
Yeah. So one of the early things that I heard you say was to name it and describe it. Yeah. Why is that so important?
Well, I think one thing is us realizing that, oh, this is my fear again. And whatever name you associate with it, that allows you to understand what this is. Sometimes people begin to have panic and even panic attacks, and they really feel like they're going to die, and they haven't quite put it all together as to what they're afraid of. And when we begin to, it may be, like you mentioned, agoraphobia, fear of, you know, they leave the house and suddenly they feel anxious, and they can feel their chest constricting. And so they just know that they're going to die, and they haven't quite thought of this as, oh, this is anxiety. And so in that case, we'd name it, mm-hmm. Oh, this is anxiety. And it's kind of, people don't die from anxiety. They just, they get tight and they get worried and they start that internal. And when people understand what it is, whatever the fear is, and then they can name it, they can usually feel better about it. It's kind of like having a diagnosis. Oh, I know what this is.
Gotcha. All right. So Forbes magazine released in 2018, they released 13 brain hacks that will allow you to conquer your fears.
Yeah.
So just real quickly, I'm just going to state them. So understand the source of the fear, get over it as soon as possible, reframe your expectation, visualize the worst case scenario, chase the fear, collect your failures, own it, failure's not final, identify an action to take right now, study your body language, listen to music, move through guided visualization, use the 5-second rule, which comes from Mel Robbins' book on the 5-second rule. Access your inner wisdom and walk yourself through it. So those are kind of just brain hacks that they mentioned.
Yep. Yep.
So if I'm sitting in an office with you and you're walking me through this, that's one thing. What would be some things? So if we have listeners right now that have fear over anything, like whether it's, maybe it's the fear of their job, they're, you know, we got a lot of listeners that are on the way to work right now. They're listening to this and they're afraid that maybe their job's not going to be there tomorrow, or they're having problems in their marriage, or, you know, so what, I guess my question is, what do you do and how do you walk somebody through a fear that is based in some sort of reality? So it's not just something they made up. It's not just it's not just something that's far out there, but you know, they're looking at their bank account and they're going, man, I don't know how it's going to happen. If I lose my job, we're in trouble. Yeah. How do they keep that from becoming a paralyzing fear? What would be some of the little tricks or tools that you would tell them to do in regard to those kind of fears?
Yeah. And I like that term, brain hacks. Then that there are many associated with treating fears that, you know, they're not all intuitive, like where you should just be able to figure them out. And that's where counseling can help. And some of these ideas in that magazine article you mentioned, but,
I didn't like number two. Number two was get over it.
No, that's not a good brain hack.
It was understand the source and then get over it as fast as you can. I'm like, okay.
You don't really have a problem if you can do that. But when folks are more gripped by fears, they can't just get over it. And so they actually have to trick their brain a little bit to coexist with the fear. And that's you mentioned paralyzing. You want to avoid paralysis. You want to be able to, okay, I know I have this fear. I can coexist with this fear. It's not going to kill me. I can not let the fear win. That's the biggest goal, is when people start seeking help, they're tired of the fear controlling them and they want to actually be able to move forward coexisting with the fear. I'll tell you a few ideas. You mentioned visualization and other things. I mean, first of all, just helping people learn to relax, helping people understand there's actual techniques that you can go through to help relax yourself, relax your breathing, some physical kind of techniques that you can, and breathing techniques you can kind of take yourself through to kind of regain control. If you're starting to get panicky, you can start controlling your relaxation. And so that's helpful, mind hack. Others are, you know, learning to expose yourself to the fear in controlled ways, and through kind of systematic desensitization, you can overcome it. You know, fear of elevator, fear of heights, you can visualize the fear for 5 minutes maybe four times a day. You know, that's the beginning of exposing yourself to it, is just thinking about it. And then you can actually go and experience the fear or get near it. And then maybe actually do the fear once. And, you know, whether it's if it's a fear of an elevator, you just get in the elevator and leave. then maybe you get in the elevator and you hit floor one. You know, you can you know, maybe with some support there with you, you have a friend that you can hold their hand. So there's ways to systematically expose yourself to the thing that you're afraid of to begin to overcome it. And there's another one that I think is my favorite. It's the idea of thinking about the fear and turning it into a song, like a funny song, like Row, Row, Row Your Boat. And so it can be like, you know, it can be like a song about snakes. If your fear is snakes, to the tune of Row, Row, Row Your Boat, where it actually brings a smile to your face and you're kind of realizing that you're taking your fear and you're turning it into a funny song that you're in control of. Or you can take that fear of something really scary, like a heights or a snake. And then you draw a picture and make it funny, you know, and you picture suddenly SpongeBob doing that thing with in a drawing, and suddenly you can laugh at it. So the idea of hacking your mind where you're coexisting with the fear and you're more in control of it than the thing controlling you.
Yeah.
So these are a lot of the strategies that people begin to do as they start talking about fears and trying to overcome fears. Brain hack is a great, is a great name for it.
Well, I'll let you go ahead and use that since you know, Forbes magazine took that from me back in 2018. So we'll get that one. So I would imagine that when people allow fear to really conquer them, so to speak, how does that translate into their life? What are some signs that people can look out for in their own life that says, you know what, I'm allowing this fear. Once again, we're not talking about healthy fear, right? Yeah. Healthy fear of don't put your finger in a light socket. Okay, that's a healthy fear.
Right.
Don't stand in the middle of the road with a truck coming at you, you know, full blast and think that you don't have to be afraid of that. So right. there's healthy fears, but whether they're real fears or not, what are some signs, some first indicators that people are listening to that they could say, you know what, I probably have to either get some help or start doing some of these brain hacks to pull me out of the fear. What are some of the early signs?
When your world is getting smaller, that's usually a sign. You know, you might not own up to this at first. You may think, oh, I didn't want to go to that party anyway. I didn't want to go do that thing anyway. Maybe what you're really afraid of is germs or afraid of people that might be there or the social setting or whatever, but your world will start getting smaller. You'll start saying no to things. You'll opt for what's comfortable. Mm-hmm. And you start opting for what's comfortable. You're letting fear win and you're avoiding, and suddenly your world's getting smaller. So that's usually what starts happening. And hopefully people will get tired of that.
Right. Yeah, that's really good. I think of the word avoidance, I think is one of the words that came to mind, is when people start to allow fear to win, they start to avoid people or they avoid going down. You know, some people might feel like they need a promotion or a raise or they have an issue at work and they're so afraid to go talk about it that they just begin to avoid. They avoid the boss, they avoid coworkers, and you're right, their world becomes smaller and smaller and smaller from there. So that's really good. All right, Anthony. So in closing, we got about another minute or so wrapping it up. So I'm sitting across from you. I come in your office. I'm like, you know what? I have messed up so many times in trying new businesses, right? I've been trying to get my own business off the ground. I can't hold a job down. I'm struggling. I'm afraid to even put my name out there anymore. I just can't handle one more failure, one more no. It just seems like nothing's going good for me. Help me. you got 1 minute to help me, Anthony. So what would you tell me to start with in that regard? Maybe just summarize some of what you said as we close out.
Yeah. Well, I would think slice it thinner. what's the thinnest thing you can do and succeed? And so just thinking of one small successful step you can make, and you come up with your goals. So we would go through a process of goal development that involved very thin slices that you can't fail at. And you control your speed and your progress and begin making forward steps. So that's the big goal, is to begin having forward momentum so that you can begin to realize, oh, I can actually step forward.
Yeah.
That's the goal. Begin moving.
I like it. That's a great way to put that. Take that one step forward. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for being on the podcast episode. I think it's really helpful. I think, as I said earlier, there's so much chaos in our world right now that is outside of our control. There's so many things outside of our control that I know at the end of the day, the only thing I can control is how I respond to it. And I bet you there's a lot of people listening that have these fears of the unknown, fear of what's coming next, whether it's financially, whether it's, you know, government-wise, politically, whether it's violence or, you know, hey, just even my daughter starting driver's ed. That's a fear I have, right? All the way down to those kind of fears as well. So I really appreciate your time.
Yeah.
Thank you for being on here. We will link to your counseling practice in the show notes. So if anybody has any questions or want to get in contact with Anthony, the information will be in the show notes. So you can go ahead and reach out to him. And other than that, I hope that as you listen to this, I really do hope, as always, that this is helping you to ultimately reach your potential, to define your purpose, and to really live your life with passion. So Anthony, once again, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
All right. Well, everybody, thanks again for listening to this episode on the Andy George Leadership Podcast, and we will catch you on the next one.